You're listening to I Thought I Heard a Sound podcast.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another exciting episode of I Thought I Heard a Sound. That's my podcast. My name is Mick, and I'm on the line with Tony, Jonathan, and Zach of Crisis Actor. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Nice. Good.
Yeah, you guys were doing some band stuff before you came on, right?
Yeah, we literally
working on a video for one of our songs off the album, Burning Up.
Okay, off of False Flag.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah, Burning Up. That is a great song. I think the whole album turned out great. I love the mix of late 70s California punk influences on that album. I really think that you do justice to stuff like the Wipers and Dead Kennedys and Code Orange and the Minutemen. I feel like you've got a really good mix of all those elements.
Fuck yeah, man. Thank you. Yeah, a lot of those are especially Minutemen and Dead Kennedys are pretty close to home for all three of us.
Would you say that that's kind of the thing that you're going for, kind of that old school punk sound?
In a sense, it's kind of the jumping off point for it for us, for sure. It's a lot of what I grew up listening to. We're definitely bringing in a lot of other influences for sure, especially on the new writing we're doing as well. But it's very much you begin somewhere, right?
Right. And just to clarify that this is Tony speaking. Because this is an audio interview. Yeah, it would be cool if you guys could say, "Hey, this is Tony. Hey, this is Zach." Before you make a comment. Yeah.
All that I grew up bullshit is Tony.
Yeah. So did you all kind of grow up on punk, or did some of you come to it later in life?
So this is Jonathan. I sort of came to it later on in life. Maybe when I was about in the seventh grade, I got into Linkin Park, POD, and System of a Down. So I mean, that was about the closest. And then, of course, the typical Blink 182, right? And then Green Day. But not to say it like that, but not to say it like that. But I wasn't fully immersed in punk until really I got a deep dive after I met Tony and Zach. So a lot of my influences were Afrobeat, jazz, hip hop, and I told like I told you, the System of a Down and all.
John actually has this is Tony. John actually does and has been doing his own hip hop stuff for years. So when we first met, he had come to catch Zach and I play in our old band F71, and we hit it off at the show. He dug the show, and then months later, when we needed a new drummer, and he came in with a couple of drumsticks, and I had no idea he played drums. I just knew I was a rapper, and I was like, "Oh shit, you want to?" He was like, "Yeah, you guys are fucking great. Let me do it." I was like, "Well, you need a drummer. Do you want to jam?" And the rest is kind of history,
Maybe that's what I'm hearing it in your music as well, is that there's a real real bite to it, and some other musical elements that I usually don't hear in groups falling into or embodying more of a revival sound. You guys sound like you are playing these songs in 1981, which is I hope you take as a compliment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know, Zach, how do you feel about what we do?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, I got into punk right around the time I started playing music, because my bass teacher was big into the Misfits and gave me my first copy of London Calling by the Clash. So that was kind of my foray into punk music. And then in high school, a friend of mine, we both over the summer decided to get mohawked and up our leather jackets with all of our favorite band names, and we started a punk band, or I played in a couple other punk bands in high school. And so it was always kind of there. And then after I got out of school and moved down to LA, I hadn't played music in years, but then I met Tony at a party. It's like, "I need a bassist." I played bass. That was kind of, but definitely the older sort of when I first started playing bass, I had a copy of Bass Guitar Magazine, and it had Dee Dee Ramone on the cover of it. And it was the 77 punk explosion. It's the issue. And so I was obsessed with the top 10 albums from 77 that they had on that list. They were foundational for my interest in the genre in general, was all of the like sort of older stuff. All the like Dead Kennedys and things like that came later. They had an interview with one of the guys from the Dead Kennedys in that issue. So all of that just sort of seemed to always be the foundation of my interest in music in general.
So Zach, since you brought up the Misfits as a favorite of, you know, someone who was instructive in your own sort of musical journey, I have to ask you, do you have any bias in favor or against any phase of the Misfits?
Yeah, I mean, the first phase was the best phase. What he gave me at the time was he had the like coffin box set CDs of like all of the Misfits stuff comprehensively. And the first CD was the best CD. It was by far the best one. Big Danzig guy. But yeah, something about the like shitty lo-fi recordings of the first stuff was really like engaging for me.
And then you hit Mickey Graves and pew!
I'll go as far as American Nightmare, pretty much where I like draw the line. American Nightmare is a pretty sick song, but it has that rockabilly revival vibe to it as well. But yeah, mostly a Danzig guy.
Yeah, I'm in that boat too. I always have to ask. I always have to ask just in case somebody has like that that controversial take. Like, no, the Mike Graves era is the best era.
Yeah, that was my. This is Tony. That was my mom's ex-boyfriend's thing.
He was hard into the Mickey Graves era. You know, loved him that the Descending Angels or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, that was such a weird era because it was so self-consciously like the theme park version of the Misfits. Like, oh yeah, I remember there used to be yeah this cool band called the Misfits. Well, they're back, and it is like the campy, dumbed down sequel version.
Disneyland with Misfits,
very much like the Horror Nights at like Universal Studios.
Not our favorite,
right? Yeah, but at the same time, yeah, I have to give them credit for doing it right, and yeah. You know, that's it had some songs, right? It had some jams.
Somebody's got to keep it spooky.
Yeah,
of course.
Never commit, never do it before. Have faith and have asked. Thoughts are trash. Life in the store.
Talk about your record, False Flag.
Yeah.
What's the reception been like? Has it been everything you hoped it would be? You know, are you still hoping to build on its success? What's going on there?
I guess I'll go first, Tony. Yeah, we dropped it digitally in February
of 2022.
And then we got the vinyl, like, kind of like did a big thing for the vinyl release in May. And I've been pretty pleased with the reception. You know, we've gotten written up in a couple different rags, you know, like Big Takeover did a review of the vinyl. So did Razor Cake. And I was stoked on that. Well, I think all of us were stoked. And, you know, it's been like, it's selling the way everything's selling right now. It's like, you know, you mostly sell shit at shows and that's fine. But, you know, people hear it, tend to tell us they dig it. So I'm happy with that. I don't know what you guys think.
I think I'm Jonathan. It's kind of surreal to me because I feel like, you know, while we're in the process of writing, recording, and touring, it's always just like, you know, you continually, you know, crank out the music and work on, you know, okay, perfecting this. And like, personally, rarely got a moment to sit back and look at, you know, what we've done so far. And like, as far as us putting the record out and seeing the reception. So when I take a look back, I think it's astonishing because it's like, whoa, we did this. And it's actually, you know, people are digging it. They're buying it. They're listening to it. They're inspired by it. You know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, I went in with no expectation to,
yeah.
To, you know, you know what I mean? So anything that we're getting back is kind of amazing to me. So that's how I feel about the record.
Yeah, we definitely did it for ourselves first.
Yeah.
How about you, Zach?
This is Zach. There's self-releasing this day and age, if you don't have already a existing like huge dynamo label, it is what it is. That was pretty much what we were not like under any sort of illusions when we were recording it or like planning to release it and everything like that. But so far everybody seems to dig it, which is great. Everybody that we've managed to get in front of has always been very receptive and very nice, and sounds like they are really enjoying it and looking forward to more. So as long as people aren't like, damn, you shouldn't make any more music.
Yeah,
I kind of to add, I guess, Tony. I know I never shut the fuck up. It's like, it's been really fun to like get warm receptions from people and all that stuff. But it's also very much like, you know, I really feel that while I think all of us are very proud of what we did with the record, we are first and foremost a live band. Like, I feel like, you know, if you like the record, you're really gonna
see us.
Yeah.
The record is like, it's a good snapshot of who we are, but like, seeing is believing, right?
And even the way we recorded it was, we sort of orchestrated it like it was a live show. We just wanted to record a live show, but yeah, in the studio, like, we wanted to make sure we like did everything live. It was all like reel to reel, yeah, one take and we're done kind of thing. Like, we'd redo it if we had to, but we pretty much managed to make everything pretty much in one take. And it just felt like it needed that intensity that we try to bring to the show. So that was the general idea behind how we went about recording in the first place.
Man, I think we had like a total of 12 hours of tracking.
Yeah.
For real. Like, you know, like three of those hours, why it sounds.
I definitely enjoyed that process so much. I felt like it was really cool to listen back, you know, and see like, oh, that's, wow, all those, you know, hours of practice and just, you know, cranking it out. Like, well, we turned over a good record. Like, we just did it like the show and it came out.
Yeah, well, I thought the record turned out great. And in listening to it, one of the things that I love about it is the intensity, is the immediacy of the album. And yeah, I guess I'm not surprised to hear that these were mostly first takes, that these were mostly you guys jumping into this. Well, okay.
It was a single take, but it was single take.
Sorry.
I think the Maybe most two. Takes we did on a song was like three.
Yeah, we really didn't do a lot. Yeah.
We did a lot of the songs were the first take, but like, you know, some were the second.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely it was the third.
Yeah, very rarely, yeah. Right.
Right, right. And do you think that's because you were coming at these songs so hard that like you basically had the energy for the first run, and then after that it was kind of diminished? You didn't have quite the same intensity?
No, I think because we did it all tape, you know, and we did it all live, so we would just go back over it if we didn't like it. So it was like we kind of like went breakneck speed for all of it. Yeah. And it wasn't like really a diminishing returns thing. It was more like, oh, did we warm up? Were we happy with that? Or maybe the engineer would be like, I think you guys can do a little better. You know, and it was, yeah, like I said, it took like, we had all of 12 hours of tracking, and we went in thinking we were going to do six songs, and we just kept being like, well, that's done. You want more? We got more time. You have more time on the tape. Do you want to do more? So I think what it was, we just kind of came in with like, just very, very prepared, and everything got knocked out lickety fucking split.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you knocked out are some real bangers. You had mentioned before that you were filming a video for Burning Up. I think that's perfect. I think that's a great song off of that album. Yeah, Rat Trap is awesome. And then there's What's a Good Cop, which I feel like is very thematic for the band. You also had an EP of the same name. As far as the themes of this album, what are some of the things that you're trying to communicate to your audience, that you're trying to bring to the surface, that you're trying to, you know, help bring to top of mind when people are listening to this album? Because I do feel like it's more than just a great punk album. You have a message as well.
Absolutely. Do you want to start with that one, Zach?
Sure. Zach. I guess just to bring personal experience and recognizing things that are sort of going on in day-to-day life, and just bringing that artistically to something that other people can appreciate and enjoy and maybe reflect on and apply to their own lives, whatever they want to do. It's not like I want anybody to do anything with this particularly, but it was very topical over 2020 for What's a Good Cop to have come out. That would have been great. But we wrote the song a little bit before that. It was like, we were playing it in 2019, and then we recorded it in early 2020. The record took forever to sort of finally come together. And so when it came out, it
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Hating cops is back in the news.
So. Yeah.
It worked out, I guess, to our advantage a little bit that we had something that was,
I guess,
relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant.
And it was just supposed to be like, oh man, here's like, we got this weird kind of like funky beat song that we wanted to like just have our own stories. Each one of us just shares a shitty experience that we had with, you know, cops in LA, blah, blah, blah. And rhetorically ask some stupid question like, what is a good cop?
Right.
And just have something that we could chant in between all of our bullshit stories about some fucked up shit that happened with LAPD.
Late night. I'm away home. Here comes Drug Squad. Rolling unmarked. One quick maneuver. And I'm shaking down. I got nothing. I did no wrong. It's just cops in this town.
Trying to get something to eat. Oh, I guess it must have been Rodeo, cause here they go harassing me. And actually, I popped a tire on the way to Van Nuys, and to my surprise, they pulled me over. I felt relieved, but instead of offering any help, they just asked me for license and registration.
So, but it's, yeah, as far as like all the other songs on the album, I think they all do tend to lean in a sort of direction, political awareness, and I wouldn't necessarily shy away from that, but it's not like I'm trying to, or personally, I'm not trying to like tell anybody else what to do or what to think or anything like that. It's if anything, it's more of a, like, everyone should be able to sort of critically look at the world around them and be like, wait, so just because this is normal or whatever the hell's going on, specifically with PB drugs, it was like, I was like, damn, like, had friends and personal experience with addiction, or for friends that have gone through experiences of addiction, and like, how, what the fuck is going on with goddamn Big Pharma? That shit seems crazy, right? Wanted to just, you know, whatever the hell comes up. These are all like very personal songs, I guess, of either existential dread or just like societal collapse, decay, and all these fucked up things going on around us that we're just sort of, you know, that's what we have to say, because that's all we're thinking about and experiencing. And everybody seems to be, I guess, as of recently, experiencing those things as well and paying attention to certain things a little bit more, which is good, and all the better that they are. I think that's all I would ask, is be a little critical about everything. I think that's kind of a linchpin of punk rock attitude in general anyway. Not that I want to be like just punk rock, everybody should just be that regardless if they're punks or not, just being critical of everything at all times, not for the sake of contrarian argument, but for trying to make things better for people or see what we actually can do or can't do.
Yeah, I think for me, I like a lot of this stuff because we all do tend to like sing our own writing, you know. So like on What's a Good Cop, for instance, all those experiences are real. It's something that had happened to all of us, actually happened to each person who sung it. And it's like, you know, in that sense, like, I guess we're making the political personal, but there it's also the personal is political anyway. So it's you can't really separate the two ever, you know, like, but that being said, yeah, like I'd kind of like, I agree with Zach in that, like, we're not preachers, you know, we're not like, you're not necessarily activists or anything like that, but like, you know, we have our experiences and we have our perspectives, and, you know, sometimes we're just talking about like personal relationships, like on some of those songs, you know, are just like about personal relationships. Some of that stuff, you know, like a personal experience with capitalism and working terrible jobs or whatever. Or, you know, sometimes it's something political and socially aware, like, you know, maybe the LAPD has a bad reputation for a fucking reason.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just reflecting on it.
I feel like it's amazing to be able to give people a voice, you know, because a lot of the things that we experience at times, it's kind of like, what can you do about it except for express it, right? And because even me, a lot of the music that I was influenced by were just people telling their experiences and like trying to change what's going on, because, you know, just everything that's been going on with capitalism and all of those, you know, political situations, they're just, you know, kind of holding people back. But now you get to express yourself and say, speak out, and it's relieving for you, you know. So I felt like being able to do the same thing for anyone who listens to the record was really beautiful for me on a personal level, you know? So that was like pretty much like my message.
Cool.
So.
Yeah. No, I think that those are all really great answers. Something that I am curious about, though, is what role does paranoia have as sort of a theme in your music? Because it's something that comes up quite a bit in your own description of the album, False Flag, and just of the band. So I'm wondering if you couldn't maybe dive more into that concept as it applies to your music and your message.
I can start this one. You know what I mean? Because I feel like who doesn't deal with some form of paranoia, right? Not even, it doesn't have to be as extreme as paranoia, but just like that, those self-conscious thoughts and or maybe self-doubt and in certain, you know, aspects or even
it's kind of universal.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a universal thing with just the human species, you know.
Zach, and I know you have very specific ideas about this.
Yeah,
very pointed ideas.
Yes.
I'm gonna roll us back to when we first changed or came up with the band name for Crisis Actor. Like, I was not entirely on board with it for like a while.
I don't really like it.
Then suddenly, I don't know what the catalyst was, but one day it just clicked and I was like, that's the fucking best name we're ever gonna think of. There's nothing else. This was also like 2018, 2019. Everybody's like sort of like vague understanding of what the whole like Alex Jones Sandy Hook thing was like not what it is today. It was very different. This was just more of like a fringe idea, or like a little bit more like, yeah, it was like in some mainstream media outlets. But I guess like over the last couple of years and its heightened political climate, it sort of earned a little bit more the merit value for people to talk about these like conspiratorial thoughts. So I guess the paranoia initially, I was like, oh, it's kind of like a fun like gimmick, like twist on its head, the whole like fucking crazy Alex Jones bullshit going on. And then over fucking 2020, when everybody lost their goddamn minds, it just worked ever more in our favor that sort of everybody just sort of turned in that direction on their own, not despite like, sure, they should, sure as hell hadn't heard our record yet. It's not anybody's opinion on it. But yeah, I guess, especially now, you know, post-2020, the paranoia and skepticism of like an entire society watching itself collapse in is just like an everyday part of life now. And it's not, I don't know that it is inherent to man. I feel like it might be a little bit more conditional based on things going on in the society that we live in. But if people are saying that they're not like paranoid about something, or that paranoia is, paranoia is obviously like the extreme. I don't think everybody needs to be paranoid about everything, but like that skepticism of everything and caution towards the supposedly like truths that we are supposed to be understanding every day. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of merit to just dogmatically listening to what are laid out as truths, but not that that should like make you lose your fucking mind. It's just, you sometimes people miss the trees for the forest, or the forest for the trees, whatever the hell. The map is not the territory.
Yeah.
I guess we were just on the right track and didn't necessarily know it, to sort of underlining something like that thematically, the world that we were watching.
I think that, this is Tony, I feel like for a lot, it just ends up being that, like, you know, I don't know, being a person who is as like into the kinds of politics that I'm into, you know, and like has been for a long time. It's hard not to be paranoid because you just watch everything. I think it was the guy who was in the Munsters who was like a lifelong socialist or something like that. He was just like, yeah, you're married to the struggle as a leftist. You know, something along those, he said something to that effect. And it's very much like, you know, when you look at a history of like being on the left and the movements, and then you look at a history of like social currents and all of that, that are now kind of like coming to a head and started to come to a head in 2020. It's like, it's hard not to be paranoid. And then you watch everybody else grow right into the same sort of, they just watch it fall apart around them, you know, beginning in like, fuck, like we could say 2020, we could say 2021. You know, with the disappointment of like, I don't know, like personally, like the disappointment of like the Obama era where everybody thought it was going to be something fucking wonderful. And it just was more of like, I don't know, the same. It was just Clinton too, you know, or like even before then, you get like your, whether it's like that or like the computer crashing thing of the Y2K shit, you know, paranoia, there's always something to be paranoid, and it's really easy to be paranoid about it. I mean, like I grew up on Philip K. Dick and like reading like Scanner Darkly and stuff like that. And it's just hard not to, or like Aldous Huxley, you know, like reading like Brave New World and like, or reading like A Clockwork Orange. And you just, it's hard when you have like, it's hard not to see that stuff and absorb it and like see like what these authors and what these filmmakers and you know, social scientists have been saying for however long about different things. And it all just kind of like feels like it's really exploding right now. And yeah, we weren't necessarily trying to be as relevant as our name and album title were. Like it was originally kind of like, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a gimmick, but like
funny.
It was like a fun joke for us, and then it just got really fucking real. And so now all of a sudden we're like, wow, okay, I guess we're gonna take ourselves a little seriously, don't we?
So much for serendipity.
I mean, at least we're not fucking stupid, you know. I feel like none of us are idiots, and like
I'm not gonna say that I'm not fucking stupid.
It pays to be humble.
Paranoia is there if you're looking for it.
You know, I mean,
and it's sometimes if you don't.
Okay. Most of the time if you don't, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there is, going off of Jonathan's comment just now, I think there is some serendipity, some sort of weird confluence of events that you would release an album as Crisis Actor called False Flag in the year that Alex Jones' career is imploded.
And obviously, calling a victim a Crisis Actor would be a monstrous thing to do.
I didn't call those guys a Crisis Actor.
I don't know if anybody could have planned that better.
Well, we sure as hell didn't, but yeah, it's hilarious.
It was interesting, like just everything just all unfolding right before our eyes, and then here we are, like, whoa, okay, well, did we make that happen? We were just making music and expressing, and like, yeah,
it is really funny how many, though, like being a serendipitous events, like how many lasts we've been a part of.
Who are you?
I'm Calista Flockhart. Who the hell do you think I am? I'm deaf.
Oh, yeah. And it's like somehow like we're
like, I guess, you know, we played the last show at this strip club called Cheetah without knowing it was the last show. We had, like, we were, our takes were the last takes that were any good on the tape machine that we recorded on, aired after us. And now, so, like, we were the last band to perform live on demo listen at Time Warp Records before Time Warp Records went to under, you know, all in before COVID, you know. We get to take the words out of Alex Jones' mouth before he loses $1 billion.
Yeah. Wow. Well, hopefully this is not the last episode of this podcast. I'm going to have to cross myself before I hit
right, 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 right. Well,
I appreciate you guys doing a do-over with me. We did an interview a year ago for, you know, a publication that I was writing for, and, you know, it just didn't work out for that to ever get published. You know, but I don't want you guys to think that is one more thing that you killed my two. That was totally my decision. So, well, this has been really fun. I'm out of questions. Is there anything else that that you guys want to add or talk about that we didn't cover so far?
I don't know. I feel like we're working on new material. We're working on a music video that we just we got some good shots for, and then we came to this interview. Yeah, keep an eye on all those things.
Cool. Yeah, and I would love to come out and see you guys sometime. So come by Chicago, please.
Hell yeah, we plan on. <It's on clock. laughs>
Yeah, just well, there's always a chance of that happening. I mean, it happened once before.
Chicago's prone to fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, just when you come and visit, just don't kick over at any oil lanterns, okay?
Okay, you got it.
Yeah.
I'll hold you to it. Okay. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.